to 13,125 a day, still way too high today. That gives me hope. And then Mr. Musk and Mr. Rubio and Mr. Trump came along and really attacked a number of these programs that were saving 10 million children every year. It had been 15 million child deaths a year and down to five. And all of a sudden, what it is, Elon Musk is putting the U.S. Agency for International Development through the wood chipper. I mean, I remember very recently hearing some remarks from David Brooks, the New York Times columnist and PBS commentator, who said, you know, these cuts to USAID have brought a rage I've never experienced before. Because he was in touch with the attack on child survival and human progress. Okay, so that brings me seriously down. But now the good news. Again, this was July 23rd, 2025. The House Appropriations Committee basically rejected President Trump's deep cuts to global health. Now, this is a House Appropriations Committee, not the Democrats on the committee, the House Committee. And so, and let me give you a couple of very quick examples. The budget right now for maternal and child health is $915 million. That's part of what drives these reduction in global child deaths. President Trump didn't ask for $915 million. He asked for $85 million in his 2026 budget. The House Appropriations Committee in mid-2025 appropriated $915 million, rejecting completely President Trump's deep cuts. That gives me hope. And I've been waiting for, when is transformational advocacy going to kick in?
And so are you saying that it's because of citizens' advocacy that shifted that?
Well, first of all, not only, but a major part, it's been 40 years of year in, year out advocacy. Let me give you one very quick example. Several months ago, 128 members of Congress, led by two Republicans and three Democrats, 128 signed a letter to the top appropriators calling for full funding for the maternal and child health and the like. So there's year after year after year, volunteers have been asking their member of Congress to sign that letter or letters like it that would go to the lead, the chair of the subcommittee that funds these global health programs. And again, I'm making up a number, but the subcommittee is maybe 13 members of the House. And when they get a letter from 128, it's like they're saying, we're watching and we're counting on you. We're counting on the 13 of you to get this right, to really protect this funding, in this case, for maternal and child health. And so that's citizens who every year are knowing who their member of Congress is, meeting with their member of Congress, knowing that there's a sign-on letter, asking their member of Congress to sign that letter, not sitting on the sideline, not saying, well, what can I do? It's going to hell in a handbasket. Nothing I can... No, not accurate.
And I know that there is, in every situation, I mean, I'm going back to my vintage Vanguard, that we used to meet regularly. There was a meeting from our local representative of our local person in Congress.
Yes.
So he was our conduit to that person in Congress. Now, we didn't meet directly with Mike Thompson, but we met with Steve. And we would meet regularly, and we'd be like, there would be 25 of us around the table, and we would talk about the issues, and we would present them to Steve. And so it was like, showing up and coming to those meetings. And they were exciting and we felt listened to. And then he would represent us to the congressman. And that's kind of how it works, huh?
Could I tell you one other story that gives
Please, I
me
love
hope?
your stories.
Because it was yesterday, I had a conversation with a volunteer in Utah. His name is Tom Moyer. And he was telling me about the relationship with his now U.S. Senator, John Curtis, who took Mitt Romney's seat. And he said when John Curtis was elected to the House in 2017, the year President Trump took office the first term, Representative Curtis said, "I'm having a town hall meeting hike." And he invited constituents to go on this hike. And it was an 8-hour hike with the new congressman. And he said, eight of us went on the hike and six were from Citizens Climate Lobby because we show up. And they did this 8-hour hike, and it was back in 2017. It was beginning of a really good relationship. And a year later, he promised an annual hike with just CCL, just Citizens Climate Lobby. And then the next hike, I'm not going to give the date right now, but it's in early September. And he expects the hike will be about 3 hours with the congressman. But the thing is, this congressman created a conservative climate caucus in the House. And at the end of last year, there were 87 Republicans on this conservative climate caucus. Now, there's still big issues that we need to solve. But, he was one of 21 Republicans who wrote a letter to the top, the chair of the Ways and Means Committee on clean energy tax credits. It was so exciting to hear about this relationship they'd built with their member of Congress. He's having a conservative climate summit every year in October. So these are people who they're going to do their 3-hour hike coming up with their senator. This is not sitting on the sidelines moaning, but building relationship.
Well, I have a story of a teammate and what he did. When we look at ourselves and say, "Oh, the issues are so big. I'm just a little person. How can I make a difference?" That kind of despair that we can all feel.
Yes.
And so Tom Greenaway, when we moved our offices up to Ukiah, he didn't he moved up and he didn't have a car, so but we Ukiah is a great walking village, so he could walk. And what he did was every single week in and week out, not missing a week, he would go to the city council meetings that were public every Wednesday.
Yep.
They're public meetings. And sometimes he would attend, and there would be, 100 people at the microphone telling their 2-minute story of
Right.
rage or anger or whatever they were doing. And then other times, and mostly other times, Tom would be the only one in the audience just by himself. And he would sit in the back row. And what he did was he sat there and he did active prayer. He prayed for the best possible outcome of that council for the best possible work they could do for the town of Ukiah. And he never got up to the microphone. He never said anything. They probably wondered, who the heck is this
Yeah,
guy,
yeah, yeah.
And he did this for years, for several years. And when he retired, we had a retirement party for him. And the city council members came to that retirement party. And they said, "Tom, because you were there week in and week out, and you witnessed us doing what we were doing, we made better decisions because you were there to witness it." Now, the point of that is going back to embodying. He got up out of his chair. He walked out the front door. He walked to the city council meeting. He sat down. He spent the time there. He did his silent prayers, and it made a difference.
Let me tell this story
I
about
love your stories,
prayerful
please.
interaction. Her name is Ellie Sparks. She was a volunteer when she told me this story. She's now on staff with Citizens Climate Lobby. And she said to me, before I joined CCL, I was suffering from climate trauma. I would read Bill McKibben's book, Earth, and I would weep at home and I would weep at work. And then I joined CCL, and our director said, we're betting the farm on relationships. Go get a relationship with your member of Congress and your editorial writer. And she does this spiel because 18 months after joining, she was leading a workshop, co-leading, on getting relationships with members of Congress and editorial writers. And the end of her little spiel on their monthly webinar, she said, going into their office, she meets 20 congressional offices over 4 days. And she said, going into their offices was hard. I had to let go of a lot of emotional baggage. I could no longer judge them or hold hostility in my heart toward them. I had to let go of my fear of climate change and my fear that they wouldn't listen to me. I had to center myself in love. Releasing fear and centering in love, this is sacred and profound work. End of quote. So she went from climate trauma to sacred and profound by her interaction and her support and that she got from the organization. And
That's
I think it's
truly
available.
that's transformational because
Yeah.
as we read someone like Bill McKibben, I mean, anybody can get depressed about all the statistics and everything. Kamala Harris has just put out a new book called 107 Days. And I watched her give a presentation on this book. And she has apparently dropped out of running for governorship of California. So she's not running for any office right now. And the person, I think it was Stephen Colbert, was interviewing her. He said, "Well, okay, you're dropping out of politics." And she said, "Oh, no." And just as I'm reading your book and I'm hearing her, and she's saying, "No, I'm going beyond trans," and she used the word transactional advocacy. I'm going beyond that because what's at stake is our democracy as a whole, and we all can participate in that. And I'm encouraging that. So I was pretty excited to hear that
That's
because
great.
it's all what you're doing.
I basically, I think she said, I want to listen to people, but I don't want it to be transactional. I'll listen to you. I want you to vote for me. No, I want to listen to you without an ask or an in return kind of thing. So I think it's very powerful.
It is very powerful. Let me ask you this. What can we do to combat fake news?
Well, I'm going to answer it except because I keep coming from us, from citizens, from the public kind of thing. And I'm going to tell this story. The head of organizing for a very large group, everyone listening would know the name of this group, which I'm not going to say. He said to me, maybe it was 7 years ago, he said, we can't let our volunteers write letters to the editor or op-eds because they'll get it wrong and misrepresent the organization. Protecting their brand was more important than empowering their volunteers. And Citizens Climate Lobby, again, the year before COVID, their volunteers had 4,300 letters, op-eds, and editorials published. Basically, they said, well, what do we have to do to help them get it right? not they'll get it wrong and misrepresent. No, what do we have to do to help them get it right? And as a result, 4,300 letters, op-eds, and editorials. And so I think it's really important, you asked the question about fake news, is that we, as citizens, create news in the terms of our letters or our op-eds or maybe being interviewed on the local radio or whatever it is, so that we can speak up, so that we can speak truth and truth to power. And I think, and so that we can be more attentive to what's real and not real that's out there.
Right. There are ways to check out resources as to whether this is real. If it seems too good to be true, check it out. It's probably not true.
I don't know.
I'm just saying that off the cuff. But in summary, I mean, we need to challenge the news that we get and really look at it carefully and go to different apps like Snopes or Fast Check or Polit Fact or whatever it is that we check in, that are trustworthy places to say, no, this is fake. And not pass it on. And not even, I think it was said, not even pass it on if you're debunking it, because in some ways that's also passing it on and creating more energy around it. Anyway, I just feel like that's important. And I also wanted to ask you about the digital infrastructure, and is that helpful in these days for the work that we want to do in transformational advocacy?
Well, at some level, it's not helpful. I don't mean like throw it out, but transformational advocacy is all about relationship. It's all relational. That's not a digital activity. It's a human activity. It's a face-to-face activity. And I want to introduce your audience, if they have not heard, Jamil Zaki, a professor at Stanford, who wrote a book. I always love to say the title, Hope for Cynics, The Surprising Science of Human Goodness. And in the book, he says, if you're cynical, it's like you're playing poker and you fold your hand before the game even starts. And I say, well, if you're a civic cynic, it's like you fold your hand before the Congress is even sworn in, before the first bill is even introduced. And we don't want to fold our hand. We want to be in the game. And we want to be in it in a relational way, not just a digital way.
So you are offering like specific trainings for us. You're available, or the website can help us to actually train us in the kinds of questions that we can ask that will elicit our next assignment, so to speak.
Well, what I'm specifically offering is to connect folks with one of the groups that I know that works to deliver transformational advocacy. The groups are the ones that will do the trainings or have the monthly webinars with guest speakers and have the local chapters and have the structure of support. So on the website, reclaimingourdemocracy.com, if you click on learn more, you can let me know that you'd like to be connected with one of these groups, or you'd like me to speak to your church or to your class or to your book group or some other group you're a part of.
And you have a lot of experience on your, you've been doing this for over 40 years.
And I'm not new, and I'm not depressed, because I keep seeing what citizen activists are doing in transformational advocacy.
That's great. What about youth? What about young people? What are you seeing for young people these days? Are they more active, or are they dropping out? Where are they?
Well, you know, it's hard to generalize. And I would say, you know, the youth vote is low, typically. I mean, the highest ever youth vote was 50% turnout in 2020. That was the highest. And so what's hopeful for me is these groups like Results and the Quaker Lobby, Friends Committee on National Legislation, and CCL have these fellows program for young people where they engage them for a year. And a lot of times they're staying and becoming group leaders and regional coordinators. So what's exciting is that they're having these programs that bring young people in. Often it's something like 18 to 35, and really engaging them in these deeper kind of offline forms of advocacy.
So I know that in what you're doing, you are asking us to go beyond like just being angry or confrontational like protests. Although I love protests, I must say, I participate. I go out when we do when we're called to get together and go out with our community. And it's wonderful to see the variety and the creativity of all of our neighbors and get together. It's a very joyful sort of experience. But what you're talking about is really going beyond that.
Yes, I had an op-ed published recently, and the title was, "We Need Protests, but we need people going inside too." So often the protest is on the outside, and, you know, we do need people going in, building the relationships, having those conversations, and making the asks face-to-face. And so I celebrate people who are protesting, and I encourage some people to also work at getting trained to go inside.
And also this really goes to the question about sustaining an advocacy position. And in some ways, I'm thinking that it does take some fortitude. It takes a group to keep encouraging each other to hang in there, even in the face of defeat, not to give up.
Absolutely. That's, again, the transformational advocacy, the first tenet is recruitment, bringing new people in, and community building. And then the second is training and encouraging breakthroughs is the third. But recruitment and community building is number one, not bowling alone. And so, you know, if you're with an organization whose only recruitment is to build an e-blast list, that might not be it. You might want to look for something that goes a little deeper.
And I know that you also advocate celebrating the wins. I mean, they may be small, but take time to say, oh, look, here, we did this, and to take the time to celebrate.
Yes.
And to recognize each other and to say, oh, what a good job you did there. Yeah. The research you did was so great. Thank you so much, you know.
Yeah. So yeah. And if I could add this, because celebration comes from actually really engaging. And one of the ideas I put out in the book is the fear of organizations of making big asks of volunteers. And a lot of times I'm asked, well, what do you mean by that? And I'm thinking, when we're launching a chapter, one of the big asks, let's say there are 20 in the room and 10 raise their hand and say, I'm in what? And one of the big asks is, we'll start with a 4-part new group training every week for 4 weeks. That's a big ask. Or every other week for 8 weeks. But you get the foundation in that training. And then all of a sudden you're doing things because you got trained that you can now celebrate. That first meeting with the elected or their staff, that first letter to the editor was published.
That's great. That's great. Oh, Sam, I want to thank you so much for being with us today. I've been speaking with Sam Daly Harris, and he is the author of the revised edition of Reclaiming Our Democracy, Every Citizen's Guide to Transformational Advocacy. His website is reclaimingourdemocracy.com, or you can give there through the New Dimensions website, newdimensions.org. I'm Justine Willis-Toms. You've been listening to New Dimensions. This is program number 3847.
New Dimensions Radio has been making a difference on our planet since 1973, thanks to the generosity of our listeners. You too can help make a difference with a tax-deductible donation or membership. Please visit our website, newdimensions.org, and just click the donate button. You can also subscribe to our free weekly podcasts and find over 1,000 hours of audio dialogues in our searchable archive. New Dimensions is produced by New Dimensions Radio in Santa Rosa, California, USA. Our executive producer is Justine Willis-Toms. Our post-production editor is Lou Judson. For over 4 decades, New Dimensions has been producing weekly conversations at the leading edge. We sincerely thank all of you who have supported us by being members of Friends of New Dimensions, as well as members of our affiliate stations. My name is Dan Drayson. On behalf of everyone at New Dimensions, whose endeavors make this program possible, I'm wishing you well. New Dimensions Radio is an independent producer supported by listener contributions. To find out more about the program you've just heard, to subscribe to our free weekly newsletter and our New Dimensions and New Dimensions Cafe podcasts, and to access thousands of other programs in the New Dimensions archive, please visit our website, newdimensions.org. That's newdimensions.org. Or call us at 707-468-5215. That's 707-468-5215. Please join us next time as we explore New Dimensions.